And welcome to Podcast Insider. I'm Mike Dell, your host this week. And as my special guest host, we have Sean Thorpe of the podcast support team here at Blueberry. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing okay, Mike. How are you?
So far, so good. And Todd is out at CES for the Tech Podcast Network. So if this is still Thursday afternoon, evening, or Friday morning Pacific time, you might catch him on the live stream over at techpodcasts.com. But that's where he's at. So he's not just off goofing off.
Yeah, Todd is always very busy, that's for sure.
Yeah, always on the road and always doing something. But anyway, so yeah, they're covering all the goodies over at CES. And we actually have a goodie here from CES that got announced that we'll talk about here in the news section. First thing on the news agenda there is Spotify is doing ad injection, streaming ad insertion, they call it. They're bringing it to podcasts. It looks to me in the article that it's initially just for Spotify-specific podcasts that are only available on Spotify, not everybody else's podcast yet. Is that what you get out of it?
Yeah, that is definitely my interpretation. It looks like it will be initially at least rolled out to the exclusive shows on Spotify. There's really no official word on if they're going to roll this out to, you know, everybody that has their show being syndicated at Spotify or what the situation is. So it's kind of interesting. We'll just have to see, you know, how it unravels over time.
Right. Yeah. If they do roll that out to everybody else, I hope that's opt in and not opt out. And I also hope that they'll share some of the money with podcasters. And, you know, because when we first got Spotify, yeah, I'm sure you remember these tickets back in the day.
See, yes.
Sean and I are sport guys, so we're going to complain about customers sometimes. But we got a whole bunch of emails saying, hey, now that my show's on Spotify, where do we pick up our check? Mm-hmm. You know, or something to that effect. And no, Spotify doesn't do that yet. Now they might. No. And they, who knows? Pandora said they were going to, so we'll see how that goes. But interesting. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm not a fan of listening to podcasts on Spotify, you know, no, and make no bones about that. It's not, you know, it's just not my thing. It's a lot of people love it. That's great. And I don't care how you listen, but, you know, I listen to their music service and I love it. But, you know, the podcast side of things, I don't know how I'd feel if I had ads being injected into my show over there, or even listening to podcasts having ads injected that the host of the show had nothing to do with, so it might not be relevant.
Yeah, it's tricky when we talk about ad injection into shows. Obviously, if someone is using the freemium version of Spotify, then they're probably hearing ads, you know, pre-post roll, regardless of what they're listening to, whether it's podcasts or music. But injecting ads into the middle of shows, that is not something I think most podcasters would go for. And I think it would not bode well for Spotify to do that without, you know, massive levels of consent from everyone involved. Because I think while, you know, there's plenty of podcasters who would still be fine with it, there's a lot that would take their shows off of the platform if they knew Spotify was going to do that, especially if Spotify wasn't going to share any of that revenue with the podcast producers. And, you know, it's worth mentioning that part of Spotify's reasoning for bringing podcasts into its platform is they don't have to pay podcasters, where when people stream music, Spotify has to pay royalties on all those streams. And I read an article just yesterday, in fact, from about a month ago, where Daniel Ek, the CEO of Spotify, specifically mentioned that they want to see podcast listening continue to grow on their platform, specifically because it saves them money. So I don't know how quickly they might be willing to embrace giving everyone some type of revenue share from ads, simply because as the way things are now, it seems like Spotify looks at the majority of the podcasts on their platform as kind of a money-saving operation.
Well, you know, that's the origin story of why iTunes, the desktop software that is going away, originally added podcasting, was because they didn't have the deals with all the record companies yet to have anything for these new iPods that they came out with. And so that's why they added podcasts back then. And it's become a big part of Apple. It's becoming a big part of Spotify. So pretty cool. So, hey, one cool thing we talked about a couple weeks ago, that Apple Podcasts and Spotify both announced on the same day that they were going to be adding their apps to the Alexa talking tube. I guess I shouldn't say the word. I don't want to keep setting the thing off. But anyway, you know, Amazon's Echo devices now have, you know, you can select Apple Podcasts, you can select Spotify, and you can select or not select anything and end up with TuneIn as a default. But anyway, a new thing came out from Edison Research, and I forget who else, but 54% of U.S. adults have used a voice command, and 24% of them use them daily on the smart speaker systems. So, yeah, it's Edison and NPR came out with that report. It was pretty interesting that, you know, it's they're selling pretty good, but you know, I don't see a big bump in podcast listening on the things yet, but, you know, what have you seen?
Well, personally, I don't own any of those devices, so I don't have a lot of my own experience with them. And I'm kind of with you, Mike, in that I haven't noticed any massive increase anywhere of, you know, a big upswing of consumption on those devices, but it seems like that's something that will only increase over time, really, just like with anything else. It's kind of a newer platform, and I don't know how many people even realize that, oh, yeah, there's a way for me to get my podcasts on my, you know, Echo device. So I think as awareness increases, we'll probably see an increase in consumption on those devices. And, you know, getting back to Spotify, for example, I think a big thing Spotify wants to do with all of the algorithmic stuff they do on the back end is they really want to create a sort of all day, all night, whatever they think you want to listen to at a specific moment, they want to deliver it. So I think as they improve that technology and more people get accustomed to it, where they can just go, hey, device, you know, turn on Spotify or whatever, and maybe they'll get a podcast or maybe they'll get a music playlist or something else. I think as that technology improves, more people will probably be likely to use these kind of devices for that, which will include listening to podcasts.
Right. And, you know, I do it sometimes, like when my wife and I listen to podcasts together, it's usually in the car or in the living room using our Echo. And, you know, it's just handy for that sort of thing. But, you know, most podcast listeners, it's a solitary activity. You know, you put in your earbuds, or you're driving alone in the car and you got it going through the Bluetooth or whatever. And, you know, it's not something you do as a group generally. And those speakers tend to, in most cases, be more of a group activity. So that might be part of why podcasting isn't as prevalent as it should be or could be.
Yeah, I feel like most cases I hear about these devices, people have them in living rooms and kitchens more so than, say, bedrooms or offices. So those are much more communal spaces where, you know, everybody else in the house probably doesn't want to listen to your favorite podcasts, but you can probably put on some music and, you know, find something that won't completely annoy everyone.
Yeah, well, it depends on how many teenagers you have in the house, but, you know, it is what it is. hey, there was a pretty funny podcasting bit on The Family Guy last Sunday, I hear. We have a link to it in the show notes. It's a YouTube video of that little segment, but they made fun of, first off, true crime podcasts that seem to be all the rage, and they also made fun of some of the ubiquitous advertising that goes on in those type of podcasts. So it was a really cool bit. If you like the Family Guy, you know, some people it's not their their cup of tea for sure. But what'd you think of that?
I laughed. You know, it does hit some pretty deep podcasting beats right now. You mentioned the true crime and the ads, and there's a jab in there about sound quality. I think Peter Griffin says, yeah, we're going to make a podcast and the sound quality is going to be terrible and we're going to have all these ads. And, you know, they do a pretty good bit about Peter's wife, Lois, calling in from prison. And, you know, the clip is less than 90 seconds and they've got barely any time to talk to her, and they do the whole time, you know, reading the, as you mentioned, ubiquitous podcast ads. So it's kind of funny from that perspective. But I also thought that, you know, this thing with the ubiquitous podcast ads is almost becoming like a trope for podcasting and podcast satire. And the joke, while it is still funny, is getting a little tired.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it seems like every time somebody wants to do a kind of satire or parody bit about podcasting, we hear about the ads. However, it also shows that from a brand awareness perspective,
it's working.
Listen up, marketeers, it's working. I mean, if we can all laugh at this satirical idea of the ubiquity of these ads, well, then it's actually working because we all remember the ads.
Right. You know, and who hasn't heard of the said mattress company or audiobook mm-hmm. company? I'm not going to mm-hmm. mention them here. They get enough. But go watch the go watch that video. It's pretty funny for sure. And speaking of audio quality, Samson's got a new thing coming out. They announced at CES, and that's the Q9U microphone. It looks quite, you know, it looks like a large diaphragm you know, dynamic microphone. I didn't read into the specs too much, but it is both USB and XLR. So you can start initially without a mixer or a Rodecaster or whatever, or an interface of any sort. You just plug it directly into your computer and it should work. And then later on, if you graduate to a different setup, you know, a mixer, an interface or whatever, you can plug it in with the XLR cable, but, yeah, it looks pretty cool. It's kind of, you know, just from the pictures, it looks roughly the size of maybe, I don't know, RE20 or RE320, but maybe not as long. Is that kind of what it looks like to you?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And, this article we have doesn't mention anything about pricing, and I don't know if that's on the street yet, but I'll be curious to see what price point this comes out at, and of course, more importantly, what the sound quality actually is. But it's definitely an intriguing microphone from a podcaster's perspective, and I think that's definitely who they were targeting with this. I'm looking at this article has a picture of the backside of the microphone, and it does have the USB, the XLR connector, and it does have a headphone jack. So
right. And it's
theory,
USB-C, by the way. So just interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's also interesting. But in theory, if you were running this over USB, you could actually monitor yourself through the microphone itself. You wouldn't need another audio output. And it looks like there's possibly high and low end.
Yeah, it looks like a low cut switch or something like
switches
that.
Switches yeah.
Well, you know, that's cool. Yeah, like one of the more popular microphones is the ATR-2100. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of a middle of the road handheld microphone, similar to like an SM58 or something. And you know, they traditionally go from $50 to $70 or something like that. So I imagine this is going to be a couple hundred dollars, guessing. But that headphone jack—that's one of the features of all those type of mics. The Samson Q2U, which is a handheld version of this, or not this, but it's basically the same thing as the ATR, just Samson mm-hmm. branded. And that's what it's for. So you get a non-latent monitoring Whereas, you know, if you plug it into your computer USB and then you try to monitor the output through your computer, you're going to have that delay. And I don't know if you've ever tried to monitor something with a half a second delay, but it makes it impossible to talk.
Yeah, I have, and it's not fun.
You know, the only person I have ever seen that could do that and do that without you knowing it's happening is Adam Curry.
Yeah. Well, Adam is very experienced, so I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, because I watched him being interviewed by somebody, and he had like a half a second delay in his headphones, and it didn't bother him a bit. Crazy.
Well, yeah. Well, he's a true pro. You know, I think if a Samson can get this mic on the market for under $200, they could have a real game changer here if it's, in fact, you know, a good microphone and right. It's reliable and everything, because you mentioned the ATR-2100 and the Q2U, which are really kind of the ones that a lot of us recommend for, you know, starter microphones, or if, you know, somebody just needs a USB mic. But they do have their limitations. So if this is a step up from there, and of course, yeah. It would be nice to get some people, you know, a lot of people inevitably fall into the Blue Yeti trap, and, you know, the Yeti, like any microphone, the Yeti is workable, but it's maybe not the best first microphone for people. So having a good quality dynamic mic to recommend would be a good thing.
Right. And like I always say about the Yeti, that you know, if you know how to use it and you're in the right environment, it's an awesome microphone. It's sure. Just you know, you've got to learn a little bit more about your environment and control your environment a little bit more to make that sound decent. Like, you know, before we started here, I was on the wrong microphone, and you said, "Wow, what's all that noise and all that?" I'm in a noisy room. You know, I got a furnace running, you know, 20 feet in front of me. I'm in a basement. It's, you know, it's noisy down here. And what it was I had the mic on my camera was picking up for some reason. And then once I switched it to my regular podcast setup here using a dynamic microphone, this is what it sounds like. And I'm still in a noisy room.
So. Yeah. And it really is, from where I'm sitting over Skype. It was really a night and day experience. It went from, you know, hey, I could work with this if I had to whoa, this is so much better.
Right. So anyway, we better get rolling. Mackenzie asked when we were doing the show notes this morning, she goes, "You can have enough stuff to talk about?" And I said, "With Sean, no problem." We always have stuff to talk about. It's great.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't know if I didn't talk to you at all about this best practice thing, but what I'm guessing is you have an opinion about it. So, Dan Smolin, one of our pro customers, as a matter of fact, had this idea. He asked me in a sport ticket, actually, whether he should number his episodes in the title or not. And, you know, what are the ramifications either way? And I said, well, really, I don't know if it's an issue, but I'll talk with Sean about it and see what he thinks.
Well, my thinking on it at this point is... You can leave the episode numbers out of your overall show titles, and I would say use the episode number tags that are available now and put the episode numbers in there. And I realize that most of the podcasting apps and platforms out there don't really support those tags yet, but I suspect that it's only a matter of time. And at this stage, I think that the numbering of podcasts just isn't as necessary as it used to be from a consumption perspective, just because most people are listening in apps where they can kind of see a cascade of all of your available episodes. And the likelihood that anybody is going to remember an episode number, like say if you reference a past episode, I think the likelihood that someone's going to remember an episode number is pretty low. But if you say, hey, 3 weeks or 3 years ago or however many episodes you have in your feed, I interviewed Mike Dell, and somebody says, oh, hey, I want to go hear that interview with Mike, they're going to remember that. They're not necessarily going to remember the episode number. So then they can look at the episodes that are available, you know, in their app and just scroll down until they find the one they want. And the other issue with episode numbers in your show titles is if you want to put them in, there's certainly no harm in that. But my recommendation would always be put them after the actual episode title as opposed to in front of, because pretty much every app out there only has so much display space for your episode title. So if the number is first, then that important information is probably going to be cut off, such as, you know, interview with Mike Dell. You know, if that's the show title, but in front of it, it says, you know, podcast initials 092-interview with Mike Dell. If you're looking at that inside a podcast app, you may not actually see the interview with Mike Dell part. So if you want to put them in, put the numbers in, go ahead and do that, but put it after the main title. That's generally my suggestion.
Yeah, and there's some technical things as well. With Apple a while back, you know, came out and said, hey, we don't want episode numbers in our titles anymore. We're going to take you out of Apple Podcasts if you don't change it. And then they backtracked the next day. We talked all about it. But, yeah. You know, they backtracked, said, well, it's okay, but we have this other tag. So, you know, in PowerPress specifically, which a lot of you that are listening to this use, you can have those Apple tags in the podcast episode box. And you can, and one of those tags is the iTunes title. It's still called iTunes title, even though Apple hates the word iTunes. But the name of the tag is iTunes title. And yeah. What you do is you, like we do for this show, if you'll notice, we'll have the episode number at the end, as Sean suggested, in the post title. But if you're looking at it on Apple Podcasts, you're going to see the Apple Podcast title, which doesn't have the episode number in it. And then you're going to see a number right before that. That's the Apple's episode number tag. So that's another way of doing it. So you could not put it on your blog post, just put it in the Apple tag, and that's fine, but it'll only show up on Apple and the select other ones that use that tag. And one other thing I want to say is, you know, you may or may not want to number your episodes. You may not even want to ever refer to a number of episodes, but it's always good to have the number in your file name.
Yes.
That prevents you from duplicating file names, because if you put out the same exact title twice, or not title, same exact file name twice, and you upload that anywhere, it's just going to overwrite the old one.
Right.
And then that old one's gone, and the new one's playing in its place, plus it's playing in the new episode. Mm-hmm. So, and that confuses people on stats, too, but we'll talk about that sometime after. But anyway, and so to answer Dan's question and, you know, everybody else's, it could be good, could be bad, or most of the time it's probably a non-issue.
Yeah.
Just, you know, there's no definitive way to do it. There's no rules in podcasting. There are some standards and there are some best practices, but there's no absolute positive rules about that. Well, and I've got actually another thing in the support section about rules. So let's buzz through this blueberry specific stuff. We don't have a lot, and then we'll get on to the interview with Steve. So Podcast Insider and the PowerPress podcast, you know, are two different websites right now. That's going to change very soon. They tell me today. It might be tomorrow. But don't worry, we will appropriately forward everything so you won't miss a beat. I don't know if you've seen the new design, Sean, but it's going to be incorporated right with blueberry.com as kind of a side page or whatever. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I have not seen it, so I'm looking forward to that, and I'm excited about this merger of, you know, PowerPress Podcast and Podcast Insider, because it's something that, you know, has been talked about for some time.
Yeah, well, you know how the development, when they say that, oh yeah, we can get that in a month, you add six. Yeah, you know, they're busy. Lots of things.
It's totally true. They've got a lot of stuff to work on, for sure.
And speaking of stuff to work on, PowerPress 8.2 beta 2, I just got done breaking it three times, and we got it fixed last night late. So that right. should be available to those that want to do some beta testing. If you're already on the list, you'll get an email with it soon, probably today, tomorrow, maybe. If you want to be a beta tester for PowerPress 8.2 and future releases, email us at support@blueberry.com and we'll add you to the beta test list and let you know when we have something to test. The biggest thing in 8.2 is the episode box has changed, and it's I'm going to have to make a video about it. It's easier, but it's so much different that if you're used to the old way, you're just going to have to erase that part of your brain and start over. But it's not it's not bad. Believe me, it's not. So, and like I said, I'll do a little video that'll go out with the beta to show you what it does. But it's everything's still there. It's just in a different place.
Cool.
So, all right. So we're going to do an interview with quite possibly the oldest podcast out there. And not really, because it wasn't distributed via podcasting until a few years ago. But this show has been around, and I call it a show, it's been around since the early 80s. And it was distributed by telephone initially, and then rebroadcast out on ham radio. So it's an interesting interview. It was my friend Steve Ford over at ARRL, which is the American Radio Relay League. And he's currently the host of the audio ARRL Audio News, among a few other podcasts that they're coming out with really, really soon. Let's get to that interview. All right, today on Podcast Insider, we've got Steve Ford, who is the editor of QST Magazine and also the co-host and producer of ARRL Audio News, among other things. How you doing, Steve?
Hello, Mike. Doing well.
Yeah, so I wanted to get you on here. You guys have been podcasting with us a couple of years, and before that, you guys were doing some other audio distribution and podcasting and whatnot, and kind of brought it all under the Blueberry umbrella.
Yeah, and before the debut of our podcast with Blueberry, we had no podcast whatsoever. And in fact, audio news did exist, but it was distributed, and I know this sounds horribly primitive, but by telephone, believe it or not. And we had a dedicated telephone line. In fact, the telephone itself was at our transmitter site, which is kind of across the parking lot here in Newington, Connecticut, which is where American Radio Relay League headquarters resides. And once a week, they would basically record a tape and make that thing available on the telephone. And people would call this dedicated line, record the audio, and then turn around and distribute it to whoever they were going to distribute it to. And this continued on for a while. I would say, frankly, well into the 2000s, strange as that may sound. At that point, we were recording to MP3 files and making those available on our website, although that didn't really work as well as we would have liked. So finally, how many years ago, Mike? Let's see.
It was a couple.
About four years ago, yeah. Maybe?
Yep.
Something like that.
Yep, something like that.
We discovered podcasting, got in touch with Blueberry. In fact, I found out about Blueberry through a conference I was attending, the Association Media and Publishing Conference, which meets in Washington, D.C. about once a year. And at a forum at the conference, somebody said, oh, we use Blueberry, we upload our podcast to them, and then it just automatically gets distributed to Apple and I believe Stitcher in that case for wider distribution. And so they were singing Blueberry's praises to high heaven. And I thought, okay, let's find out what this is about. And I think I contacted you not long afterward.
I think that
you got us started, really.
Right. And if you guys don't know, I'm also a ham radio operator, amateur radio operator. And of course, the American Radio Relay League, if I'm not mistaken, has been around a little over 100 years, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's kind of the big overarching organization of ham radio operators in the United States and somewhat worldwide. Maybe you have a better description for the pitch here.
No, you're right on target. Sometimes if somebody asks me what it is we do, and then they're not ham radio operators, I sometimes say, well, we are to amateur radio as perhaps the National Rifle Association is to gun enthusiasts, or as AARP is to retirees. In other words, we're an advocacy organization trying to work for the interests of amateur radio in this case, or ham radio, as a lot of people like to call it. And you're right. We've been doing this for, 105 years now, to be exact. And we're going into our 106th year. And we put out a magazine called QST magazine. I almost said QEX. That's another one.
That's a different one.
We've been doing that for, since 1915. So that magazine is over a century old. And in recent years, we've been branching out into other forms of media. Once upon a time, QST was kind of the be-all, end-all of media within amateur radio. It was the go-to place for information. But now in the internet age, that's really starting to change dramatically and fragment. We have e-newsletters. We are about to launch an e-magazine, in fact, January the 10th, to be precise, new magazine called On the Air. And there'll be a podcast, by the way, to go with that. So thanks to Blueberry, we've been able to expand our podcast options considerably. We've had audio news, which is what I think, Mike, you were bringing up initially.
Yeah, that's the interesting story as far as an origin story, because I think you guys have the oldest origin story in podcasting.
Well, we might. If you count the telephone and MP3 distribution, that may be true. Audio news is a strange bird. It really is, because we record it, first of all, every week. Record and distribute every week. And most of the people listening to it, even though it is distributed as a podcast, you can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, and what have you. But the majority of people listening to it are listening to it through devices known as repeaters. And for people who aren't into amateur radio or technological, a repeater is simply a relay device. And it listens to radio signals, and then it repeats or relays those signals over a very wide area. So these clubs and individuals throughout the country and in various parts of the world get our audio news podcast from Blueberry, either through iTunes or Stitcher normally, or directly off the Blueberry directory. They turn around and then they rebroadcast the podcast on these repeater devices so that people can listen to it on their amateur radio transceivers, if you will.
Yeah. And I remember back in the day, a lot of the clubs have a repeater. You know, a repeater is kind of, usually it's in a high place and covers a geographic area. You know, when I was out west, they were mountaintops, so, it would cover hundreds of miles. And around here, in the flatlands in the east, they cover maybe, 50, 60 miles comfortably. And they have these things called nets. So they're kind of like gatherings. Once a week, usually the club will have an on-the-air gathering on the repeater, and during that net, part of that would be to play ARRL audio news. And I remember hearing that, and you're one of the few podcasts out there that if you listen to that, you take ID breaks, because there's a rule in ham radio where you have to identify every 10 minutes. So go ahead.
Well, and not only that, but these repeater devices... And again, I'm going now for a description that will be coherent, at least for those who are not overly technical. But these repeater devices, usually have timers where you can only transmit continuously, typically for about 3 minutes.
Right.
And if you keep transmitting beyond 3 minutes, the repeater will shut down. And so when we put our podcast together, we have to break it up into segments that are no more than 3 minutes in length. In fact, typically they're about 2 minutes and 50 seconds. And at the end of every segment, we use a Morse code character, the letter K, which sounds like da-da-da.
Yep.
And in Morse code, or at least as it's used in ham radio, that means over or your turn or go ahead, something like that. And so the person who is sending the podcast audio to the repeater, when they hear that, they know they have to stop transmitting. The repeater timer then can reset, and then they can resume transmitting for another 3 minutes. So if anybody's listening to the podcast who has no idea what amateur radio is, they're probably baffled as to why the podcast every 3 minutes just comes to a halt. Yeah. With this unusual Morse code sound. Although in the beginning of the podcast, I do explain it. But anyway, you know how that goes.
Right, right. Now, like I said, I remember. How long has Audio News been produced total? Because I seem to remember it maybe back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Audio News really grew out of the increasing amount of news presence we had at ARRL headquarters. And you're right, that started in the 80s. There were some others that were active at that time, in fact, are still active, like the Rain Report.
Yeah, remember
you've
him.
Heard of that?
Hap, I forget what his last name was, but Hap Holly, I think his name was.
Yes, exactly. And so amateur radio, at least here for amateur radio podcasting with Audio News, you're quite correct. Started in the 80s with that unusual telephone delivery mechanism, then transitioned to MP3s on our website, and then finally to Blueberry and 21st century podcasting. We were just kind of late getting to it.
Yeah, and like I said, it's podcasting is just another form of distribution, and you guys had that distribution thing licked because you know your target audience is hams, and hams generally have access to repeaters, and you know most areas have somebody that does that sometime once a week and plays Audio News or Rain Report, or I don't know if Rain Report's around. I think Hap passed away.
So. You're right. He did pass away. That's true.
Yeah, I used to talk to him. He was in Chicago, I believe, and we'd get on 40 meters, and you'd hear him on the mid-cars net on 40 meters, but we're getting way far afield here from podcasting, but fun stuff. That was, you know, way down on the shortwave segment of the spectrum, and it was kind of cool because, you know, we had pretty good distance, you know, from here to Chicago, from northern Michigan to Chicago across the lake. You
could,
40 meters was perfect during the day, during mid-cars, and like I said, we'd hear Hap in there, and he had a unique voice, but anyway, totally off subject there, but like I said, I always thought that you guys getting into podcasting with Audio News specifically and some of the other ones you've done and some of them coming up is a great use of podcasting and kind of a merging of technologies, because hams traditionally have been the leaders of technology. That repeater device you're talking about sort of evolved into cell phones. I mean, kind of, not that's directly, true. But that's the same sort of technology on a much simpler basis now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hams were making telephone calls from their automobiles using these repeater devices well before anybody had ever heard of cell phones. Yeah, I did that myself, and I remember at the time people were just amazed that I could make telephone calls while I was driving down the highway. Of course, you had to be a little careful. Ham radio operates under certain restrictions at the time, like, oh, you couldn't call and order a pizza on it because that was commercial applications. And you also, unlike modern cell phones, it was what we call half duplex, which meant that, or a simple way of saying that when you were talking, you couldn't hear the person you were talking to, and vice versa. So if I was talking to somebody who wasn't a ham, like my mother, for example, I would have to tell her, okay, Mom, when I'm talking, I can't hear you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, flip it back and forth, sometimes even saying over. But anyway, that's right. Those are the old days.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember that was the big thing. In the 80s, I remember doing that. You know, you'd bring up the auto patch on the repeater. That's what they called it. And you could dial a phone number and, you know, you could talk to, you know, usually you would try to brief whoever you were going to be calling on the repeater. You would brief them, you know, way ahead of time that, hey, if I ever call you and I say I'm on the radio, A, everybody that has a scanner within 50 miles of this can hear this, for one thing. And second, I can't hear you while I'm talking, and I can't interrupt you while you're talking. Well, I guess I probably could have. But and then the other thing in ham radio, just to talk about technology, the first emails I ever did was via ham radio, a thing called packet radio. And
that's true.
It was great, you know, it wasn't like today, you know, where you send an email and 3 seconds later you get a reply and 10 seconds later you get another reply, you know, or almost real time. Well, I remember sending emails to my dad when I lived in Idaho, back here in Michigan. I would send him a packet message and it would be, you know, probably a day or two by the time it got to him. And then he'd read it and respond to it, and then be a day or two and I'd get it back, get a reply.
Oh, I remember that. And you're right. Huge shift in technology, which we could talk about separately in another podcast.
Sure, sure.
Would last an hour easily. And it's had an effect on amateur radio, without a doubt. There was a time when it was really extremely unusual for an average person who was not in the government or the military to be able to have a conversation via radio with somebody in another country. Only hams could really do that on their own. But now, you know, that's of course completely changed, and it's very much a new world technologically. And again, it's without question has had an impact.
Oh yeah, definitely. Back in the day, a friend of mine and I did the first ham radio pod class, we called it, where we were teaching people how they could get their ham radio license via podcasting. And that was kind of a novel idea. And now, people like Gordon West and other people are doing the same sort of thing. And there's a lot of ham radio related podcasts out there. And I think, you know, even though the technology may seem old school to some of us, it still has a lot of use. And some of this new technology is actually getting people into the old technology.
Well, that's true. And when you mention having a lot of use, something about podcasting that we've found that's extremely appealing to our members is the fact that it allows them to listen to whatever the podcast is, whether it's audio news or some of our other podcasts, on their terms at their time. It's very common, for example, to hear from somebody who says, oh, I have a half an hour commute to work, and so I listen to your podcasts. Excuse me, Mike, I'm losing my voice. I listen to your podcasts when I'm going to and from work, or I listen to your podcasts at night before I go to sleep. I hope we're not the ones putting him to sleep, but be that as it may. And that's true. Unlike radio, where, and I'm by this I mean broadcast radio, where you have to listen to it on their terms. In other words, whatever song they're playing is what you have to hear at that time because you don't have a choice. With podcasting, you have a choice of what you want to listen to when you want to listen to it. And that seems to be really groundbreaking for a lot of people.
Oh yeah. And you know, that's the explosive growth, not explosive growth. You know, that everybody says that, but podcasting really has grown slowly over the years, and you know, it's just gaining and gaining. We just went over 800,000 podcasts in existence.
Wow.
Not 800,000 ever, but 800,000 currently right now that you can subscribe to and download episodes. It's you know, quite amazing, you know, that when we first started this whole podcasting thing, there might have been a couple hundred, and every podcaster listened to pretty much every other podcaster.
Yes. Well, I've noticed the production values are getting better and better. Some of the podcasts I listen to, the production value is top-notch with music beds underneath and so on, very nicely mixed. It's impressive.
Yeah, on this podcast right here, we just got our production team on it, and we're actually doing some of that. So our production values are getting better. So anyway,
I've heard some of it. It's really impressive.
Yeah, that's our Blueberry Pro production team. They're pretty good. Anywho, you guys had a couple other podcasts that by the time this airs, they're probably going to be discontinued. And you got a couple of new ones coming up. Maybe tell the story a little bit about some of the past ones and what's coming.
Well, the one that has just ended was called The Doctor Is In. And that was a podcast I did with another fellow by the name of Joel Hallis. And we discussed technical subjects, dispensed advice, and so on. And that had nearly a four-year run. But frankly, we just started to run out of things to talk about. So we finally ended the podcast on, in fact, today, when we're recording this, which is December 19th. And again, it was very popular among our membership and had a good run, but it was time to do something else. We also had a podcast called So Now What? And by the time this podcast airs, that will probably also be terminated, mainly because we're going to be shifting to a new podcast. And these podcasts, and specifically the one called So Now What?, was intended for brand new hams, beginners in the hobby. And so we're going to be transitioning to one called On the Air. And that will also be intended for beginners, but it's also going to be coupled with our new magazine, which will debut on January the 10th. And again, the magazine is called On the Air. So we're using podcasts in a way to, well, sort of a dual-pronged approach to media, at least in this application. We will also have another podcast that I will be doing, and it's called Eclectic Tech, and that'll probably debut either at the end of January or in early February, I would imagine. And that is ideally supposed to take the place of The Doctor Is in that it will discuss technical topics at a somewhat higher level, you might say. Now, audio news will keep going. It's been popular. We may have it produced by a different department here in our corporate headquarters, but it'll keep going because hams enjoy it. So,
oh yeah,
probably by, I would say, February the 1st, we'll have altogether, well, two new podcasts. And then, of course, on, audio news. And this won't be the end of it. We're looking at more podcasts down the road. We don't have specific plans yet, but there is discussion of podcasts devoted to very specific topics in amateur radio, such as antennas, building transceivers, that kind of thing. And that most likely will be late 2020, early 2021. And again, we'll be paired up probably with some electronic magazines that I imagine will be rolling out at that time.
Right, right. Yeah, like I said, it's a kind of a mix of the old and the new. You know, the publishing business has certainly changed over the years. I was also involved in the magazine publishing business in my past. And so, you know, I know how that business has gone, and, you know, certain niches, you know, stay pretty viable. We did one called Live Steam. It was all about building model steam engines, believe it or not. So you want to talk about niching down. And, you know, and same thing with podcasting. Sometimes the tighter the niche, the better, you know, better it is. You know, you may only get, you know, a couple hundred listeners, but man, they're going to be devoted listeners.
Oh, absolutely. What I was mentioning earlier about the fact that our print magazine, QST, used to be the be-all, end-all, that was also the primary member benefit of our organization, was this print magazine. And that worked in so much as the magazine had a virtual monopoly on the information that it provided. However, as you know, Mike, very well, in the internet age, that's just completely dissipated. I mean, there is no more one-stop shopping. You have a virtual cornucopia of information out there that's as close as a keyboard or a smartphone. So with podcasts, with the e-magazines and so on, we're expanding so that somebody who joins ARRL gets not just this single primary member benefit. Instead, they get a whole range of benefits, the podcasts, the magazines, all of that, rather than just one thing.
Yeah, and that's you know, mainly how most hams come to the league, is they still find that magazine. And even now, I think that's a major, yes, major recruiting sort of thing. And you guys are always at all the ham fests or conferences, you know, like the Dayton Hamvention, or I guess it's Xenia, Ohio now. And you know, you guys have the big ARRL, what do you call that, convention every year there usually, or, you know, and then you have regional ones. And, you know, I used to go to the one out in Seaside, Oregon. It was a really big one.
Oh, yeah.
And that was great.
There's a big one coming up probably not long after this podcast airs in Orlando, the Orlando Hamcation, early February. I don't remember the exact date.
Right. Yeah, I went to that one as well. We have a podcasting conference down there called PodFest that used to be in the kind of the middle or end of February, and now they've moved it into March. So they don't line up, but they did used to line up, so I could go to both.
Well, it's the whole podcasting thing has, again, so far worked out very well for us. And Blueberry gets, frankly, a lot of credit for that through your help, but also because it's made it very easy for us with the portal that's there. We can go in and load new episodes. In fact, my favorite expression, what I'll say to some of the people here is I'll say, okay, the podcast episode is loaded in the torpedo tubes and ready to fire, you know, on this date at this time. The portal makes it very easy, and the statistics are extremely useful. Fascinating, frankly, to look at some of these and see, as I did the other day, that apparently somebody, maybe more than one person, according to Blueberry, is listening to audio news in Ethiopia.
It's not unheard of, believe me. And they might be playing it on a repeater there. You never know.
They may. So no, it's been extremely helpful. In fact, I don't want to sound like I'm shilling for Blueberry, but it's just the truth. I mean, without Blueberry, we really could not do what we do.
Right. And, you know, we try to make it as easy as possible. And as we've been talking about in other parts of this podcast and other episodes, that we're really working on a UI upgrade and all that. So things will get easier at Blueberry and more useful. So very cool. We're glad to have you guys aboard. Definitely, you know, kind of a merging of my hobbies and you know, I'm a hobbyist podcaster, and then I work in the podcasting industry, and I'm also a ham radio operator. And our corporate counsel, Barry there, he's also a ham radio operator. And so, you know, and actually our CEO, I'm really trying to get him into it, but he's afraid his credit card would melt if he got into it.
And he's probably right. That's, amateur radio is not one of the more cheaper hobbies in the world.
It can be, just depends on what you're into. You know, I was amazed the other day. I was flipping through Amazon, as I sometimes do, and I thought, well, what do they got for ham stuff? And you know, you can get a handheld FM transceiver, a little, you know, walkie-talkie, I guess, or HT, as a lot of people call it. One of these made in China ones. I mean, they're probably not the best things in the world, but they work. And, you know, for like $70, you could have the whole setup. So, you know, it's not overly expensive. Just depends on what you want to get into, because, you know, you can get an HF rig and a tower setup and all that and spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on that stuff.
Oh, yeah. There are people, hams, who have invested extraordinary amounts of money into their stations. I'm serious. I mean, trying to think of a good example, probably Tim Duffy, K3LR. I think he's got $100,000 in his station. I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, yeah. A lot of those guys, you know, you'll think of a, you know, a tower, you know, you put up a 100-foot tower and, you know, all the supporting structure and all that stuff and the antennas that go on it. You know, that's not a cheap endeavor. But like I said, you don't absolutely need that stuff. Like I said, with a repeater, no. You know, just for local talking, or even now, you know, voice over IP on the internet, through repeaters. We link repeaters together, several different ways. There's a thing called Echo Link that, can link repeaters together. There's, D-Star, it's a digital format that can be linked. There's I don't know, there's 3-4 of them anyway. And you know, if you could, the sky's the limit, both money wise and where you can talk. You know.
Oh yeah, I don't mean to give the impression that you have to sink $100,000.
Of course not.
In fact, at my house, I just have a 43-foot piece of wire that goes up into a tree and a few wires on the ground, and I won't get into what they're for your audience, right. But with that, I'm able to have conversations with people thousands of miles away. So no, it's however much you want to throw into it, like anything else.
Yeah, it's just like podcasting. You know, you can go hog wild and set up a you know, basically the equivalent of a radio station production studio, or you can you know, talk into your phone in a quiet room and, you know, you can still do a podcast and, you know, ham radio, just like anything else, is very much like that.
Well, you know, when it comes to podcasting, Mike, something you turned us on to, which was a godsend, was, what is it? Audphonic Leveler.
Yeah. Audphonic. Yes.
What it's called.
Yes.
That piece of software, we purchased 5 licenses for, I think it was $350, and that's some of the best $350 that our department has ever spent, because it does wonders for our podcast. And for those listening who don't know what I'm talking about, and correct me, Mike, if I'm wrong, basically it takes your raw audio and completely levels it out for a nice, smooth, consistent sound. It's magic. It really is.
Yeah, basically what Audphonic does is, like, say you and I are recording remotely. You're in Connecticut, I'm guessing, and I'm in Michigan, and we're, you know, doing it through voice over IP. And, you know, say I didn't set your levels right, so you're lower than I am, or I'm, or higher than I am, and, you know, plus you have, you know, you want to be at a loudness level. And this, we're getting to geeky stuff again, but you want it at a loudness level. Like, you know, if you're listening to a series of podcasts in your car, and you don't want to have to jump for the volume every time somebody talks. So you want to have that all kind of leveled and kind of at the same level as everybody else. And Audphonic does that just super easy. Yes. You just drag and drop, hit a button, you're done.
Well, if it had been for you, I would never have known that existed.
Well, very good. So, Steve, I guess we're probably at the end of our little interview here. So, time for the plug. how do people get a hold of you? How do people, you know, check out the ARRL or amateur radio if they're interested?
If they like, they can go right to our website, www.arrl.org. If they want to email me directly with any questions, I'm at S, as in Steve, S Ford, F-O-R-D, at ARRL.org.
Okay, very good. And like I said, keep fighting the good fight. Your podcasts are awesome, especially audio news. Like I said, I listen to that religiously. So,
thank you.
You know, and I have, like I said, from the 80s. So, you know, that's probably the longest piece of audio content that I've been listening to continuously. So I think you might have the record for the longest quote unquote podcast.
we might.
All right. Well, thanks for stopping by, Steve, and we'll keep you going here.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, we're back. Let's see. We got some support stuff to talk about. And then Sean, I'm sure you have a lot to add here. But I think you put this in here about feed redirects. Or did I? I don't remember.
That was me.
Okay, good.
And I wanted to talk about it today because, you know, I think what I'm seeing anyway with the turnover of the new year is a lot of people are, you know, kind of reworking existing podcasts or closing existing podcasts down and either rebranding or, you know, maybe moving to a new location, starting a new show, whatever the case is. And anytime you decide to do something like that, and if you want to maintain your existing audience, sometimes people don't, but if you want to maintain your existing audience at whatever your new location is, then you really need to redirect your old, we'll say your old podcast feed to your new one. And, you know, depending on what platform you use to generate your feed, there's different ways to do this. Here at Blueberry, if you're using a self-hosted site with PowerPress, then you really have to do that on your own. And there's a couple ways to do that. And we do have a support document I think we can link to, Mike, that has some suggestions as far as editing the htaccess file. There's also a really good plugin simply called Redirection, and it's free. And you can add that to your site. And then it's a lot easier, in my opinion, with Redirection to add redirects. But if you're comfortable with the htaccess file, that's probably a slightly more efficient way, but you know, you have to exercise a lot of caution with htaccess because if you mess it up, you will take your whole site offline, and that's never a good thing.
Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, I've done it too. if you're a Blueberry publisher user, in that case, you want to just contact support because we have to put those redirects in on the back end, but we're happy to do it. And in fact, I've already done a couple so far this month. So, just some things to be aware of if you're in the process of moving. And if you're ever unsure, the best thing to do with a redirect, or if you're moving a podcast for any reason, is, you know, go forward with caution. And if you're not sure what to do, please contact support and we will advise you. We will help you, because there's really only maybe two, maybe three right ways to do a redirect. There's a lot of ways to do them wrong, and you do not want to do your redirect wrong, because right, that can open up a whole other suite of issues that can be a real headache to fix.
Right. And one big takeaway with redirects is the old place has to exist at least for a couple of weeks or a month to do the redirect from the old place. So whatever your old feed was has to still exist, or at least that web address has to exist so that you can forward that. If you just turn off your WordPress site and turn the domain into a black hole, then your podcast goes into a black hole because your feed is tied to your domain. So, you know, you have to keep things around. So as Sean says, just be slow and deliberate about it. You know, you can do a lot of things wrong, and there's only a few ways to do it right.
Well, and kind of turning your statement there, Mike, around, you also do not want to redirect to a feed URL if the feed is not completely ready and accessible. Right. I actually had a request like that this week where someone wanted to redirect a feed and they knew what the new feed URL was going to be. They had everything set up, but they had their site in, you know, coming soon mode or under construction mode or whatever. And when you do that, it puts the, it makes the feed inaccessible. And if you redirect a working feed URL to a feed URL that's currently inaccessible, that can cause problems. So you don't want to redirect to your new feed until, you know, the new feed is operational, valid, you know, it works and everything. Because if you've submitted your old feed to syndication points like Apple Podcasts, Apple will generally pick up the redirect. And if the feed that you're redirecting to is functional, they just change it on their end. You, everybody just goes over to the new, you know, the new URL, and that's great. But if that new URL is broken for some reason, then Apple is probably going to delist you.
Yeah, so. and you know, they're slow about a lot of things, but they're not slow about that. If your feed goes dead, you know, tops a week.
Yes.
And they'll be knocking you out of there. So anyway, we better speed this up. We're going long, Sean. And, anyway, one new thing I just heard from Apple, and we heard this directly from Apple, is that if you have curse words in your titles, you can still put your podcast on Apple Podcasts. That's somewhat new. I didn't realize that you could do that. But you can have curse words in your titles, but don't self-censor them. Apple will do that for you.
Yeah.
So, and that's another case where if you want it censored, if you want the title of your show to be a censored curse word, then you're going to have to argue with Apple, because they're going to get mad at you for putting the splats in there instead of the full word. So I don't know how that's going to work out, but just be aware that don't self-censor show titles or episode titles, at least not for Apple, because they'll get mad about it.
Yeah.
And passwords. I've had a couple of attempts to regain access to a Blueberry account. And we've got to be really careful about that.
Sure.
Because, you know, there are social engineers out there that want to gain access to other people's stuff. And most of the time, it's as Sean was talking about, you know, before with the, you know, somebody signed up for a church account and then, you know, nobody knows about it because they left. Well, that happens with passwords and logins and stuff to, and we understand that. And there, we have ways, I'm not going to go through those ways. We have ways of verifying who you are and that you do indeed have access to this show, but know that you can't just call us on the phone. You know, Dave and I are there, you know, several hours a day, and you can't call us. You can't call us on the phone and say, "Hey, I need the password change for this account."
Right.
Okay, you have to do it online, or you know, or somehow other, you know, prove to us that you are who you say you are, because we can get in big trouble if we give access to your stuff, you know, without your permission. So, you know, if you aren't author, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We just have to be careful for security purposes.
Right. That makes complete sense.
All right. So we better get out of here and let you get back to your next podcast. But, thanks, Sean, for being here all the way from St. Louis Obispo, California. So this is one of the longer distance ones, except for when Todd was in Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm one of maybe two team members that's outside of the Eastern time zone now. So
yeah, well, I think Kathy and Kathy and you. So yeah
wow. Just the two of us.
Crazy. All right. Well, you have a great remainder of the day, and catch you next time.
All right. Thanks, Mike.